morning. Today's daf and Baba Basra's Kuf Lamed Ches. For approaching the end of the eighth parak of the Masechta, eighth parak of Baba Basra is long. It deals with Yerusha, deals with inheritance. It's started on Kuf Ches 108. It's ending tomorrow on Kuf Lamed Ches. It's a significant parak. We're towards the end of it now. We're finishing up a discussion we had yesterday, and we are talking about the concept of acharecha. A person is assigning his estate to somebody, and with a line of succession. He says, "I'm going to give it to you," and then afterwards it's going to go to you, and afterwards it's going to go to you, and he establishes a second, maybe even a third recipient. So basically what we're trying to figure out is, in the interim period, meaning when it's in the hands of the first recipient, what is he? Is he just simply allowed usage of the item? Does he have a certain level of ownership of the item? And this we saw was a machlokes between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim in terms of what can the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi, in terms of what can that first recipient actually do with the item. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that he could sell it. Now, it's like I mentioned yesterday, the way that I'm going to express it, the way that I present it, is that there's a letter of the law and there's a spirit of the law. Letter of the law is, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it's yours. It's the first beneficiary receives it and owns it. And as an owner, you do with it whatever you do with it, with anything you own. You could buy, you could sell it, you can give it away. You could do with it what you would like. That's the letter of the law. What's the spirit of the law? Spirit of the law is that you know there's a second beneficiary and you know there's a third beneficiary. So really, what you should do is you should not sell it and you should not give it away because you know that the interest of the original owner was after you should go to the second line of succession and then the third line of succession. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel takes a position in which technically it's yours, it is yours, the letter of the law dictates that it's yours, but there's also some sort of spirit of the law that you should also try to should try to maintain and preserve. That is the position of Rav Shimon Gamliel, and as we already discussed yesterday, that's the halacha. Halacha falls like Rav Shimon Gamliel. With that stated, that's basically yesterday's daf. So let's continue right where we left off yesterday. And we are right in the middle of Kuflam Zainam and Beis with a story. Ha'isa saw there was a woman, Dahavle Dikla Ba'ar Dura Bibi Barbai. So somehow, the Gemara doesn't tell us the history, but somehow she had a tree right in the middle of the property of Bibi Barbai. However that occurred, but that's where her tree was. And Kol Emes Dahava Azla Migzarei Hava Kapidi Lavan. And now what she would have to do is she would have to walk through Bibi Barbai's property in order to cut down her tree, not cut down, but to prune her tree. And every time she would do that, she'd be stepping on the property of Bibi Barbaye, and she'd be stepping on his garden, and Rabbi Bibi Barbaye understandably was not happy every time she had to walk through. Okay, so basically now where they were in a position where it was continuously contentious. And so what she did is that she actually did something really nice. Aknisa nihale koshne chayav. So she basically says, look, I don't want this kind of animosity between me and you. Here's what I'll do. For the remainder of your life, and as we'll see in just a moment, he's not going to live that long, and I know that's not the kind of nice thing to say. I know it's not. But you'll understand in just a moment why I say that. I will explain myself. So, okay, so he says, for the rest of your life, the tree now is going to belong to you. I'm basically assigning the tree over to you. I'm gifting the tree over to you for the rest of your life. And then, after you finish living, the tree's going to come bounce back to me. So again, this is very similar to the discussion we've been having yesterday. This is very similar to the idea of acharecha, where she creates a line of succession. Although, the difference is, and I'm giving away the Gemara's ending, the difference is that in the line of succession, it's bouncing back to her. It's not going to a second party, it's not going to a third party, it's going to back to her. So that is fundamentally different, and I just gave away the Gemara's ending. But
how does that help her in any way? Like she's avoiding friction, but yeah, she's going to be back to the same problem after he dies. She's not getting like yeah, right
maybe
away
somebody
when
else.
He dies.
Maybe somebody else
yeah,
won't
be more
right.
Meanable.
Yeah. Okay. I hear you. Okay. Now, so what he does now, Rabibi Barbaye, is that he now transfers ownership of the tree over to his son. Meaning that he's basically now using the halacha of Shimon Gamliel, which is now that even though he's a temporary recipient of the item, But, in other words, like Rav Shimon Gamliel says, as long as you have it, it's yours. So what he does now is he transfers ownership of the tree over to his son with the thinking that, oh, you know, Rav Shimon Gamliel says it's, you know, it works, therefore it works. Now, I know we also said on Amud Aleph of yesterday's daf that you shouldn't do that. And one would like to assume that Rav Bibi Bar Abaye would not only keep the letter of the law, but he would also keep the spirit of the law as well. And it seems like he's not keeping the spirit of the law. Okay. I didn't like saying that. It didn't feel comfortable saying that, but that's what it seems like. So I'm Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yeshua Mishum Da'asim Mimulai I'm Ritzim Ilum Uliyaseh. Anyway, Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yeshua says, look, you come from Mimulai. Now the Rashi points out that's actually the name of a place. He quotes a Medrash Breishis Rabbah where you actually see that he actually this Rav Bibi Bar Abaye comes from a location called Mimulai. Anyway, so Mishum Da'asim Mimulai I'm Ritzim Ilum Uliyaseh. So you come from Mimulai, so therefore you say things which are mulyase. Short-sighted, short-minded. In other words, he didn't say anything that was overly intelligent. It's a dig. Okay? It's again, no getting around that. And as we know, it's a dig. It's like onaz devar. So like, it's different.
That's
it's not lashon hara. Onaz devar. Lashon hara is when I'm speaking about somebody else. Onaz devar is when I am verbally confronting you and verbally attacking you. It's whatever. It's not the same. But the anyway.
Now it's lashon hara because
you. Right. Very good. We're talking about it now. So okay, great. So anyway, I feel Rishim Gamalelo Kamar Ella LaAcher Avalatz Malo. And now the Gemara is going to give away what I already gave away, which is look. You want to tell me the halacha falls on Rishim Gamalelo? I not only hear that, I agree with that. I accept that. But Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that look, if you set up a line of succession, first it's going to go to him, and acharecha it's going to go to him, and acharecha it's going to go to him, and I'm setting aside a first recipient, second recipient, third recipient. So then, yeah, when the first one gets it, it's his. That's true. But over here, she said, I'm going to give it to you in the interim period, and then it's going to come back to me. This is different. In other words, over here, when she gives it away, knowing that it's going to come back to her eventually, so there, she's not giving away the Guf HaDavar. She's not assigning the title over to somebody else. The only thing she's doing to him is basically saying, here, look, I'm just going to stay out of your way. You get the peros. But I'm going to maintain title of the item for myself, in this case, a tree. I'm maintaining title of the tree for myself. It is going to be mine, and it's going to revert back to me. And you do not have the right to gift it over to somebody else during this interim period because it's not yours in the way Rabbi Shimon Gamliel would say that it's yours. The cases are different. Just to point out, by the way, we know this already. The Rashbam tells us Rabbi Bibi Bar Abaye is obviously the son of Abaye. Abaye and Rava both come from Mishpachas Eli. They come from the family of Eli. The Rashbam brought us back to the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah to remind us of this information. Eli was cursed for, you can see the beginning of Sefer Shmuel for an elaboration of why, but Mishpachas Eli was cursed, and as a result of that, they all live short-lived lives. They can get life extensions, Torah, Gemilas Chasadim. Again, all this is in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah. So when I said earlier that she knew that Rav Bibi Bar Abaye wasn't going to live a long life, Mishpachas Eli. In other words, it was part of the genes. I don't mean that literally, but yes, it's part of the genetics. Okay. Anyway, back to our Gemara. Okay, Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman. Okay. Now we're going to go back to a topic of discussion that we had yesterday. Admittedly, it's a strange. It's a strange discussion in that it's kind of hard to really put into any kind of rational logistic term. I spoke about it yesterday with Martin after the daf. Matana manas lahachzir. Matana manas lahachzir is I'm going to give you a gift with a condition. And the condition is it's got to come back to me. Right? In English, I think we have an expression called an Indian giver. But in other words, but built into the matana is it's going to come back to me. And we know, as the Gemara said yesterday, that is considered a gift. Obviously, it's only going to be registered as a gift if the condition is fulfilled, if it's brought back to me. But during this interim period, it's a gift. I called it yesterday temporary ownership. Okay, I know that doesn't sound convincing. It's yours, just, you know, for a short amount of time. But okay, but that's what we learned yesterday. In fact, we learned yesterday together that, let's say, for example, the mitzvah of lulav and esro, where on the first day of Sukkot, it is a mitzvah in the Torah to take your own lulav and esro. You have to have ownership. And as we discussed in yesterday's daf, you have to be sole proprietor of the lulav and esro. You cannot share it with somebody else. Even if you have a share ownership of it, in other areas of halacha that works, like we talked about yesterday, talis. But when it comes to a lulav and esro, you have to have a sole proprietor of the lulav and esro. And we said yesterday's daf that if I give an esro to somebody on the first day of Sukkot, matana amanas lahachzir, so during his temporary ownership period, he is going to fulfill the mitzvah of lulav and esro, meaning it works. Matana amanas lahachzir works. We saw that yesterday. It's an established fact of the Gemara. Again, I understand from a conceptual standpoint, it's hard to process, but that's what we learned yesterday. The Gemara is now going to return back to this topic of discussion. The Gemara begins. Amar Rav, Amar Rav Nachman, Shor Zeh Nasan Lach Mamatana. Am Menashe Tachzir Hu Li. So I'm going to give you this ox, and it's going to be yours. It's a matana amanas lahachzir. But again, the condition is you got to give it back to me. So, higdish v'yichzir ha'ari zemukdash u'mukhzar. So now we're going to learn a halacha together, which is really going to push the limit of this idea of matana amanas lahachzir. And that is as follows. If the recipient takes in, the recipient now, again, is the owner, temporarily, but he is the owner, and then during his ownership period, he says, you know what, I want to go to Hekdash. And he's mukdash it. And then he returns it. So Rav Nachman says, condition fulfilled. It worked, meaning that this temporary ownership now worked because he fulfilled this condition, and that is he returned it. Now, hopefully everyone here in this room is thinking to themselves, you got to be kidding me. Right? In other words, returned it. He returned it now in a state. Right, returned it in a state now of Hekdesh. Now, who does it belong to? It belongs to Hekdesh. So Amalei Rav Rav Nachman Maya Hadre. So Rav says to Rav Nachman, what did he return? He may have physically returned the animal, but come on, it doesn't belong to the owner now. It belongs to Hekdesh now. What kind of returning is that? So Amalei Umay Chasrei. So Rav Nachman's response back to Rav is, well, what is he missing? Meaning he gave an ox, he got back an ox. Okay, belongs to Hekdesh now.
The ownership.
Okay, right. Okay. In this exchange between Rav and Rav Nachman, I also hear Rav Nachman a lot clearer than I hear Rav Nachman. I hear Rav a lot clearer than I hear Rav Nachman. Right? I'm admitting on the front end of this discussion. I know conceptually this is hard, and here when we're pushing the limits of matana manas lahachzir, we're basically, you could be makdish and return it, and that is considered a satisfaction of the agreement, of the condition. I get it.
How can you return it? It's not yours.
Right, correct. Okay, so. So, Ela Amar Ravashi. So the Gemara says, Ravashi says, I'm going to give a little more context and nuance to this discussion. It's going to come out a little bit better. Okay, Chazinan. So Rav Ashi says, it really goes like this. Well, let's see. If the condition was, as long as you return it, period. So if that's the condition, so then it's been returned. Again, I understand it's been returned in a state now of Hekdesh. Okay, I do get it, but there, at least condition is fulfilled to the most literal sense of the word. However, but if the condition was, I need you to return it to me, with the additional word of li added to me did the chazi, le kamerle. Well, what I meant was, to me, something that could be useful to me. If it's Hekdesh, it's no longer useful to me. So Rav Ashi says that if you got to look really hard at what the condition, how the condition was stated, if the condition was just simply return, so then return is a satisfaction of the condition. If it's return it to me, something that has use and utility to me. Fine. The Gemara now.
Say return. I mean, to whom?
I do understand. I understand. It's pushing the limit of this idea. The Rashman points out, and someone asked me this question yesterday. The Rashman speaks to this idea very clearly. Okay, you're on the receiving end of matana manas lahachzir. So that means that temporarily you're an owner. What kind of shmira responsibilities do you have? Okay, good. So the Gemara is not going to discuss this, but the Rashman does discuss this. It's on the bottom. So what kind of shmira responsibilities do you have? Meaning, are you a shomer chinam? Well, It's so interesting. It's yours. In other words, you're not watching somebody else's object. This is your object. Yeah, but you know you have to return it. Meaning, and in fact, if you don't return it, so then it's not yours. It's like such a built-in paradox. It's such a built-in irony that if you don't return it, it therefore never was yours. But at the same time, it's yours. So you're not a shomer. So what kind of shomer responsibilities do you have? So the Rashbam's opinion, he says, I think, right, the Rashbam, if you want to see it inside, four lines from the bottom. On this summit, Harei ze muktesh muchzar klamer. Harei ze muktesh harei muchzar huven is kaima tonight. The glay milsa dahav yematan lamafreya v'nira be'enai. Rashbam says I have an opinion on this, and that is the emes besoch hazman departum l'shalom. Let's say it dies during this interim period. Okay, in other words, you're not a shomer at this point in time, meaning it died. Okay, so it died. And you're not going to be responsible for that kind of liability. Look, in other words, it's ones. You're not a borrower. It's yours. In fact, the Rashbam says, I'll go a step further. Let's say it was stolen. Let's say it was lost. You're not a shomer. So you're not going to be liable under those circumstances. The Rashbam says that I think that the only thing that you're really going to be liable for under these circumstances is if you're negligent. If you're negligent, it's basically tantamount to damaging it. You're a mazik. Under those circumstances, you're going to be liable. Anything short of that, the Rashbam says, I don't think you're going to be liable if you're on the receiving end of matana manasa hachzir.
So if
huh?
If the calf was born, do you think the calf is
this goat? If the calf was... Oh, in other words, it turns into a shor muad.
No, if it gives birth.
Oh, I'm sorry. If it gives birth, is it yours?
If it gives birth,
the calf is yours. Right. Okay, good question. I can only guess. Meaning, I don't know. And I'd rather not guess. I just don't know. It's a good question. Okay. Fine. That's where we are right now. And the Gemara continuing. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel towards the bottom now of Kuf Lam Zayin Amid Beis. The Gemara just continues. Akos Nechasa La'achir V'Amar Hala Yefshi Bahen. Kind of Afilo Amar V'Tzavach. So the Gemara is going to start off with a halacha by Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, which again is going to be really hard to hear and understand. And that is, let's say somebody wants to gift you something, and you say, I don't want it. And Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says, even though you're saying I don't want it, even though you're screaming, but nevertheless it's going to belong to you. You're the owner even against your will. Now, right now, I'm let's not comment on this because the Gemara is going to redact and the Gemara is going to refresh the statement at its face value. It's really hard to understand. Nobody can give you something against your will. That's a general rule throughout halacha. So stay tuned. We're gonna explain this. Rav Yochanan Amar Lo Kana, and Rav Yochanan says you're not Kona, which is again much easier to hear. If you don't want something and you're rejecting it and you're saying I don't want it, so it's not yours. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Mama Velo Pligi. The Gemara says really there's no debate here. Meaning we need more context and we're gonna get more context. We're now on the top of Kuf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. Kam B'tzavchan Yikara, Kam B'shoshech Mikara. Ula V'sof Tzavach. So the Gemara says, look, if at the origination where somebody says, I want to give this to you, and your immediate reaction is, no, I don't want it. Don't give it to me. So it is not going to belong to you because you're rejecting it from the onset. On the other hand, if your original reaction was silence, and then after you receive it, you then say, no, I didn't want it, well, now it's too late. Meaning, shtika koda, your silence at the original presentation is viewed as an acceptance of the item. Why is it that you can reject an item from the point of origination? So the Rashbam writes over here, I want to read the Rashbam inside, the top Rashbam of Kuf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, mitchila kishamasa lo zesa shtar. So you have every right to reject a gift from the point of origination. If you don't want it, it's considered a liability. Why? Why is a gift considered a liability if you don't want it? So the Rashbam says, based on the Pasuk and Mishlei. We learned together in the Pasuk and Mishlei, Sonei Matanos Yechya, that a person who ate gifts is going to continue to live. Meaning that what you should do is you should be the kind of person who lives to the best of your ability in an independent state. And you should not have a dependency on other people. And if somebody wants to give you a gift, you should, your position should be, I'd like to reject that because Sonei Matanos Yechya. You'll have more chayim, more chiyus, if you reject a gift from the origination. That's why a rejection of the gift is, I'm sorry, if you don't want a gift, it's for you considered a chov, it's considered a liability. And another interesting point, a really interesting point. Somebody wants to give you a gift, you reject it from the point of origination, at the beginning when he offered it to you. So now, what we learn two things in this Rashbam. One, you have every right to reject it based on the pasuk of Sonei Matanos Yechya. Two, what's the result? The result is, it's no longer the giver's because he wanted to give it. It's not yours because you have the right to reject it. So who does it belong to now? Hefker. It belongs to nobody. The Rashbam quotes the Gemara in Krisus in the opinion of Reish Lakish. The Gemara there says that the halacha falls like Reish Lakish. It belongs to nobody. Now it is in a state of limbo, of hefker, of ownerlessness. Somebody can come over and pick it up and it belongs to him. Okay. Back to our Gemara. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Zika lo yidei acher. Let's say I'm going to give somebody an object. I'm not handing it to him, but I'm handing it now to a third party. We know the halacha is et zachen la adam shelo befanav. If let's say I want to give something to Alex, and Alex is right here, and I hand it over to Phil, and I say, Phil, accept this on behalf of Alex. That works in halacha. However, the Gemara tells us, and now let's read the Gemara again inside. I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak Zichlo Yideachiv Vishasak Ula V'Sof Savach. If originally, when Alex sees me handing it to Phil to receive it on behalf of Alex, so then, as if he's quite originally, so it would. It would work. Although the Gemara says, Banal Machlokit Rishim and Gamal Rabbanan. Dichsiv. The Gemara says, now the truth of the matter is that this is subject to a debate between Tanayim. And the Gemara now quotes a Braisa. Of course, the Chasav La'achav Ayubam Avadim, the Amar Hala E'af Shibahan. So, let's say a person is assigning over his estate to somebody else, and part of the estate included an Eved Kenani, and the other person says, I don't want it. So, if the recipient was a Kohen, so now the Eved is considered owned by the Kohen, and therefore the Eved can eat Truma. Because we know the halacha is that an Eved Kenani that's owned by a Kohen is entitled to eat Truma. No, since the recipient rejected it and rejected it from the very beginning, so therefore it's going to go to the Yorshim, it's going to go to the inheritors of the giver. Now, we just learned together on the Rashbam that when somebody gives a gift to somebody and the person rejects it, so where is it belong? Who does it belong to? So the Rashbam just taught us, based on the Gemara and Krisus, it belongs to nobody. It doesn't belong to the giver, it doesn't belong to the receiver. How can Rav Shimon Gamliel say it belongs to the giver? So the Rashbam points out, you have to say this over here, that Rav Shimon Gamliel disagrees. Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion that when the giver gives it and it's rejected, it bounces back to the giver. That's the opinion of the Rashbam over here. V'havinan ba. Now, after learning this braisa together, the Gemara says, now I wonder. Tanakama, filoma v'tzavach? Meaning, I can't understand the opinion of the Tanakama. If I'm trying to assign somebody over assets, including an Eved Kenani, and he says no, how, and Rabbi Shimon, and I'm sorry, and the Chachamim say, well, if he's a Kohen, the Eved can now eat Truma. No, of course not. Meaning, he rejected the gift, he rejected the Eved Kenani. I don't understand. So, Amar Rav Avitamer Rav Yochim b'tzavach mikaro dekulam lo pligi delokani. So the Gemara says, obviously over here we have to fill in more context, and it goes like this. If when I originally presented and he says no from the very beginning, so then obviously the gift does not go through. And if when I originally give it to him, he's quiet, and then at a later point in time, he protests and he screams out, I don't want it, so it's too late. Because when you originally accepted it, you were silent. Silence is understood as acquiescence. It's yours. Key pligi. When is there a debate between the Tanakhama and Shimon Gamliel? It must be in the following scenario. Zika lo al yedei acher v'shasak ulu v'sof tzavach. Where I don't hand it directly to the recipient, I give it now to somebody else to receive it on behalf of the recipient. And now, and he's, everyone's here. In other words, he knows about it right away. And his original response is silence, followed then by screaming out. Tanakama sever mi dishasa kanina vahai dekat tzavach mahadahu dekahadabe. So the Tanakama says, look, when I handed it to Phil on behalf of Alex, and Alex is right here, and originally he was quiet, that means that he accepted the gift. The fact that he protested later is only because he's at a later point in time he said, you know what, I changed my mind. But it's too late. You already accepted it. Rav Shimon Gamliel sever hochich sofal tchiloso. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says no. Because I didn't hand it directly to him, I handed it to Phil. And then Phil then in turn handed it to him. So the reason why he originally was quiet is just simply because I didn't directly hand it to him. And the principle of Rav Shimon Gamliel is that by virtue of the fact that at a later point in time he is now protesting, that is reflective of the fact that really he was protesting from the very beginning as well. And as far as why didn't he say something from the point that I handed it to Phil, because it wasn't handed directly to him. So he's thinking to himself, well, I don't need to protest right now. It wasn't handed to me, it was handed to somebody else. And now that he sees that he's receiving it, and now he's saying, no, I don't want it. No, I reject it. I reject it out of hand. And according to Shimon Gamliel, that is reflective on his position from the onset. Okay, so where do we stand right now in terms of the reception of a gift? So, a couple of things. One, we learned together now in the course of the beginning of today's daf that you have every right to reject a gift, and you have to do so at the point of origination. When the gift is being assigned over to you and you hear about it, the moment you hear about it, you protest. So that protest is in fact registered, and you can reject the gift. If, on the other hand, you're quiet when you receive the gift, and then at a later point in time it's protest, you have accepted the gift, and therefore it's yours. And then the only position of, or the only room for debate over here is where I handed not directly to him, but I handed somebody else on your behalf, and you were originally quiet, and then you protested when it's actually handed to you. Debate between the Tanakhama and Shimon Gamliel in terms of whether or not it's yours or it's not yours. On this, by the way, the Rashbam points out, one last point over here, the Rashbam points out that here the halacha is not going to fall like Rosh Shimon Gamliel. Now we have a general rule, which is that when you have Rosh Shimon Gamliel in the Mishnah, we follow his position. So the Rashbam points out we didn't learn a Mishnah together. This was a Braisa, and the Rashbam over here writes that we only say that the halacha falls like Rosh Shimon Gamliel in a Mishnah which is more authoritative. But if it's just a Braisa, now I'm saying this obviously in context. If it's just a Braisa, so that doesn't necessarily mean the halacha falls like Rosh Shimon Gamliel. Just an interesting point by the Rashbam. Okay. Right in the middle of the Amud of Kuf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, we continue now with Tanur Rabbanan. Shchiv Meira Shamar Tanur Masayim Zuz Laponi V'Shosh Meir Laponi V'Arba Meir Laponi. So we have a Shchiv Meira, and now he is assigning part of his estate to people, and he's actually giving dollar amounts. I want 200 to go to so and so, 300 to so and so, 400 to so and so. So now it sounds like it's an order, right? And that means now that if we understand his statement as being in order, so that means now that first give 200 to so-and-so, then give 300 to so-and-so, and they give 400 to so-and-so. Now, if the estate just can't cover all those assignments, so seemingly we're going to be following the order in which he stated. The Gemara is now going to reject what I just said. So the Gemara says, so here's what we're going to say. We're going to say that even though he said it in a sequence, it's not to be understood as a sequence. Why not? It's very simple. We are human beings. We cannot say these things simultaneously. It's impossible. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to do so. Shamar v'zachar b'dibur echad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can say Shamar and Zachar simultaneously. We are not capable of doing that. That is just one of our many limitations. So therefore, when a person's saying 200, 300, 400, really, it is all a concurrent gifting to all three, or to all three recipients. He just can't say them all at the same time. Therefore, the Gemara says, if there is a account payable now going against his estate, so the Balchov, the creditor, can go after all three of them. There is no order of gifting, of receiving. Aval. However, says the Gemara, Amr Tanu Masayim Zuz Laponi V'Acharav Laponi V'Acharav Laponi Amrim Kol HaKodim B'Shtar Zoch L'Ficha Yet Alav Sharchov Govim Min Acharon Ein Lo Govim Mishlafanav Ein Lo Govim Mishlaf Nepanav. If however, in the Shechit Merah saying, first give him 200, then give him 300, then give him 400, using the word Acharav, so now clearly he meant it in that order of succession, and that means we know that when you have a creditor, so the creditor first goes after the last one, then the person before, etc., etc. So now, the 200 is now the let me say it otherwise. The 400 now is first in line, the 300 is second in line, and the 200 is third in line. And that means now when you have creditors coming against the estate, so you, the 400, you're the last one to have received, you're therefore the first in line in terms of paying any creditors. Tanu Rabbanan. We're on the bottom of the Amud. Ashrim Rosh Amr Tanu Masayim Zuz Laponi B'ni Bechor Karo Ilo. More on this discussion of Ashrim Rosh and his instruction and how to understand his instruction. He says, I want you to give 200 Zuz to my son who is the oldest, Karo Ilo, as fit to him. Now keep in mind, he's not saying the word Yarish, he's saying Tanu. I want it to be a gift. So, is this going to be Is his instruction over here a gift in addition to his bechor? So the Gemara says yes. That's exactly how you understand it. Not lin v'notels bechoroso. So you take the 200 because the way that we're understanding this is that this was a gift above and beyond his bechor, and on top of that, he also takes his bechor portion as well. Im amar bivchoroso. If, however, his instruction was give it to him for his being the oldest, so Yadol Yona Ratzanot Lan Ratzanot Bechoroso. So the Gemara says, so now you can either receive it as a gift or you can receive it as a Yerusha. So let's say his Bechor doesn't make it to 200, so then he'll take it as a gift. If it's, let's say, his Bechor does get up to 200, so then he'll take it as a Bechor. Okay. Shchemer Hashamar Tanu Masayim Zuz Laplonis Ishti Karayilo. Now, we're going to do the same thing two times again. Let me say that better. In two different circumstances, we're going to basically say the same halacha. Where he's a Shechid Merah, he's assigning his assets to, we just talked about his firstborn son, we're now going to talk about his wife, soon to be widow, and then we're going to also talk about a creditor. Now, in the case of the wife, so we also know that he has an outstanding obligation towards his wife, meaning that in the event that he dies, and he is dying, he's a Shechid Merah, so then his estate is going to owe his wife the ksuva payment. If he says as part of his last declaration and instruction, I want you to give Masayim Zuz Laplonis Ishti to my wife, Kavra Oilo, as is fitting to her. So again, question. Is he talking about his ksuva obligation, or is he talking about an additional gift above and beyond his ksuva obligation? And again, the Gemara's conclusion is going to be the same as we just said previously. No la samva no tell us this ksuva sa. If he said the word what he means is that this is an additional gift of what he would like to give to his wife, in addition to the ksuva payment that he owes her. Im amar big ksuva sa, if he says, however, that I would like to give it to her as the ksuva obligation, so then yadal yona ratzon olam ratzon tas ksuva sa, and again she now can receive it, and she's in the driver's seat; she has the upper hand. Meaning that if the ksuva, if her ksuva obligation is less than that, now 200 zuz, that's normally what the ksuva obligation is, but Sometimes it could be less than 200. So here it's going to be more in lieu of the ksuva.
And if it's she has a choice to refuse the money also, because the ksuva is more.
Yeah, right. They're right. Exactly. Okay. Ushchimer Hashamar Tenum Asayim Zuz Laponi Balchovi. One more time, we're going to do this halacha where the shchimer right now is assigning property. In this case, he's assigning it to a creditor. And he says, I'd like to give this money to the creditor, karo'i lo, as is fitting to him. So note lan v'notos chovo. So he will take it and he will also take his obligation as well. Meaning that what he's doing is that he's providing a gift to the creditor. Now, it happens to be that in the case of the creditor, it really is different than the case of his bechor son and the case of his wife. Because in the case of the bechor son, in the case of the wife, are you allowed to give gifts to your son? Absolutely. Are you allowed to give gifts to your wife? Not only allowed to, encouraged. Are you allowed to give gifts to a creditor? No.
Why not?
No. And the reason why not is because it looks like ribbis. It's mechzik ribbis. So are you allowed to give gifts to a creditor? No, you really shouldn't. And mechzik ribbis, the Gemara on a number of occasions says that anything that you give above and beyond that which you owe him can be construed as interest. So over here, well, the Gemara is going to say the same thing, but we'll see. The third case may be different. So no lamanot lo chavavim amar bichavo. Again, the same idea. If his language was bichavo, so no lam bichavo mishum da'amar mishum. I'm sorry. Period. So then it's understood that what he actually is assigning to the creditor is actually the debt that he owes. Now the Gemara says on this last case, mishum da'amar karaylo no lamanot lo chavo v'dima karaylo bichavo kamar. In this last case, I can easily imagine that even when he says the words karoyelo, he's not really trying to assign a gift to the creditor. What he really means, of course, is pay the man his money. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman Amar Lihuna Hamani Rabbi Akiva Yid Daik Lishni Yaseira. So the Gemara says, you know what? I normally would agree with you. Yeah, you're right. In the case of the Balchov, I would normally say that what he meant was just simply pay the man his money.
What do you say?
Yeah, I do understand that. And the only reason why we're entertaining the idea over here that when he said the word karoilo, what he means is in addition to that which I owe him, give him some more, is because he is subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva, as we'll see in just a moment, this is something we did earlier in the Masechta. This for us will be excellent review. Rabbi Akiva says that if you add superfluous language in your assignment, it is significant. It is cause for us to say that there is meaning and intent behind the additional language that you use. The Gemara says, how do I know this? We go back to a mission that we learned earlier in the Masechta. Lo sabor v'lo sados. Alpha b'shikasov lo umka v'ruma. So let's say you're selling a house to somebody, and you say umka v'ruma, I'm selling you both the elevation in the house and that which goes below the house as well. So even though you said that language, you know what's not included? If let's say there's a pit and there's a cistern underneath the house, that's not included in the sale. And on top of that, Rabbi Akiva says that when you sell that to the person, so now you've retained the pit for yourself. The pit that's underneath the house. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Akiva, an idea that we've expressed already a number of times, he says that when a person sells, he sells ba'ayin yafeh, he sells with a generous disposition, and that means that according to Rabbi Akiva, when I sell a person a property, I've sold them the entirety of the property. And even though I have a pit underneath the property, and even though I'd like to get to my pit, you know what I'm going to have to do? I'm going to have to buy or rent a way to get to my pit because I sold them everything. That's the idea of Ein Yafeh. Now the Gemara goes on, and according to the Chachamim, no. By you retaining the pit, you've also retained a way to access the pit as well. However, if you add the words Chutz Me'elo, I'm selling you the house to the exclusion of the pit. Now you didn't need to say that. Because as we learned together, The pit is not included in the sale. But when you go out of your way to say chutz me'elu, that's superfluous language. And what comes out of superfluous language? So it's what comes out of it is that it is there to add something. In this case, it's there to add that you have retained also a walkway, an access point to get to your pit. Ama kev delotzarch v'kamar litfu ye milsa ka'ase. You didn't need to say it, you said it, so therefore it's coming to add something. Hachanami kev delotzarch v'kamar litfu ye milsa ka'ase. Same thing over here. You didn't. You didn't need to say the word karayilo. You said it, so therefore it's superfluous language. And what comes out from that is that you're in fact going to. You're going to. It's understood as not. I'm not just giving them this money to the creditor as an obligation. It's an addition to the obligation that I owe. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. Shchemira shamar money yeshli eitzel ploni. So let's say Shchemira says that you know somebody owes me money. Now, generally speaking, whenever we talk about Shchemira, we're talking about him giving and assigning assets that he has to somebody else. In this particular case, however, again, he knows his life is coming to an end, and he would like to make sure that everything is recorded and documented. So he says that so-and-so owes me a certain amount of money, $100. So, Hayinim kosim alfa pishein makirim lefichach kishugov etzorach lavi rai divrei meir. So our mayor's position is that, look, we don't know, meaning this is a case of a taina. It's a claim. That's not verification. That's not validation. That's not testimony. So our mayor takes a very interesting position, which quite frankly is hard to understand. And that is, we'll write it up, but this document won't be actual proof. It'll just simply be, in other words, we're writing up, he declared the following, and then if in the event of collection, the estate is going to have to bring additional proof. Now the Chachamim says, no, don't write up such a document. In other words, this is not verification. This is not testimony. It's just a claim. Don't write it up. And Ella Imke Makirin, unless the witnesses there know that it's true. But otherwise, don't write it up. So, if he made the declaration and the people there know that it's true, so under those circumstances, it's limited, but under those circumstances, they could write it up. Therefore, lefichach, kishugov ein tzarich lavi raya. If, in fact, it's written up, so therefore he can collect. The estate can collect. Why? Because according to the Chachamim, the only reason why it's going to be written up is only if we actually have validation, verification, witnesses who authenticated that this is, in fact, so. Okay. I'm Rav Nachman, I'm Elihuna, Tana Reb Meir, Omer and Kosvim, Chachamim, Omer and Kosvim. So Rav Nachman says that Rav Huna taught him that Rav Meir says you don't write, the Chachamim say you do write, meaning flip. V'af Rav Meir lo amar ela mishum based in Toen. And even Rav Meir says, you know why? You know why we're not going to write? We're not going to write because we're worried about based in Toen. Meaning that basically if you have some sort of document, what's going to end up happening is that the document will be passed over to another Beis Din. A second Beis Din will look at it and they'll say, ooh, look at that, shtar. And they're going to collect and they're going to obviously make a mistake. This document was not actually verification. It's just simply it's just simply writing down his declaration. I'm Rav Dimi Menardeh, Hilchasein Choshen LeBeis Din Toen. Now, Rav Dimi Menardeh says, no, you know what, we're not really worried about Beis Din Toen. So the Gemara says, really? So the Gemara says, you know, Rava told us that you don't do chalitza. Now, in this case, do chalitza means you don't write down that chalitza occurred. You don't write down that mian has occurred. Mian is where, in limited situations, a woman can reject her husband and annul the marriage. Very limited situations. I'm not going to go through it right now. You've been around long enough in the daf, you'll know what the circumstances are. Anyway, Beis Din will not write these documents down unless they know that this in fact happened. Lefichach koshin get chalitza v'get miyam v'alfa pishayim makirin. So the mishum dechoshin leBeis Din Toen. So the Gemara says, we are concerned about Beis Din Toen. We're concerned that this kind of document gets to another Beis Din, and they'll assume that, oh, it must be true, because it was written down. So the Gemara says, Mishum Dechoshin LeBeis Din, lo. Beis Din Basar Beis Din lo Daiki, Beis Din Basar Edim Daiki. The Gemara says basically like this. Look, I'll tell you when I can envision a mistake occurring, and I can tell you where I'm not worried about a mistake occurring. If, let's say, you have a document written down by Beis Din, even though it's not true, even though it hasn't been authenticated. But, in other words, somebody declared it, Basin just simply writing it down as somebody said so. If Basin is writing down any kind of, it's putting anything down on paper, so then I can imagine that this paper will make its way to another Basin. All the other Basin is going to look at is, hey, this was signed by Basin. Oh, it must be true. In other words, and I can imagine that they're not going to, they'll make a mistake and they'll say, look, Basin signed it, it must be true. Not having read the fine print, which is, this is not, we're not saying that this is so, we're just simply saying that somebody made a declarative statement that this was so. Fine. If, however, I have witnesses signing on a document, and it's just witnesses, and it's not Basin, so then we're not worried about Basin tone. We're not worried about Basin picking up the document, looking at the two signatures, and just simply saying, oh, it's okay. In other words, they will read the document, and under those circumstances, the document is actually going to say, and it will state that so-and-so claimed that this happened, but that doesn't mean that this is actually so. So the Gemara says that if Basin is the source of the document, we only write it if it's known. We don't write it just simply a declaration. If, however, witnesses are writing up a document, even though it's just a declaration, then they're going to write that in the document, so then we're not worried about Basin tone. Okay, we'll stop over here. Obviously, tomorrow we start with the Mishnah and the Mirzah Shem. Tomorrow, we're going to finish the 8th Perek of Baba Basra.